My name is Phyllis Sato. I'm 88 years old. The date is November 8th, 2022. I'm in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth, calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. I'm here with Carolyn Oley, who is my longtime friend and former colleague. So we have known each other since 1977.
My name is Carolyn Oley. I'm 72 years old. The date today is November 8th, 2022. I'm in the StoryCorps virtual recording booth calling from Charlottesville, Virginia. And I'm here with Phyllis Sato, who has been my friend for 45 years. And now we get to share some of those 45 years. When I think back to it, Phyllis, I remember how your whole family arrived. And I was on vacation when you visited a week or two before. And so when you arrived, I hadn't met you or the family beforehand. And I was a little in awe that a whole family came to visit and to stay at the village. It was daring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I remember not initially, but you told me maybe a couple of days later that the village had had some difficulties with previous families, and the village was not consulted about our arrival, and it was one of the things that is indicative of a rather new enterprise, such as Innisfree was at the time. It had started in 1971. And Heinz was the initial person on the spot, and he was the one who brought in the co-workers and the volunteers, and it wasn't at the consultation with the board, but looking back, we would not have come in the way we came in later years.
It's true. I think it became a community over time. It started out more as a community in name, less in cooperative or consensual agreement. But I think the arrival of maybe you and I helped the village have more stability and then be more communal.
Yes, I think particularly when I came, and I don't know for how long before, Michael Henges was the assistant director, because Heinz was often traveling, but he was in the office all the time. Michael was when he decided to go back to graduate school, then we were left with a question of how it would go from there, and I think that was the beginning of the steering committee.
Right.
A coordinator. Weren't you the first coordinator?
Yeah, I was.
And I think I succeeded you when you moved on from that
and surpassed.
No. Well, yeah, I ended up being affiliated with the office some way or another.
For decades. Oh, gosh. I remember when the children were in public school and they had been homeschooled in India before that. And so I think there was a question technically whether they needed an on-site teacher or something. And because I'd been a teacher before coming to Innisfree, I remember having to sign some paperwork to assure that the children were, and they needed no encouragement. Well, certainly your older two daughters needed none, and I had no authority over Ken, so.
Yes. Actually, Naomi, as the oldest, was not even eligible to go to public school because she was a senior, and she'd not even had Virginia history or physical ed or 4 years of English literature. So she went to Tandem, which said that they would help her get into college, but maybe not give her a high school degree. But
yeah, but she earned that diploma.
Yeah. But Lay was put back in the sophomore year of English and plus the junior. It was a mess.
Yeah. What was it that made you choose Innisfree?
We had actually chosen the state. Sato, my husband, had chosen the state because he wanted to grow shiitake. And so we were looking for land. I thought, having known Camp Hill villages in England, and having a number of friends who worked at the Camp Hill villages, I thought it would be nice to be located near such a community to be associated with. Mm-hmm. We were rather hesitant about becoming, losing our autonomy in a community, having lived in one prior to coming. We wanted a break from that, mm-hmm. but we...
You didn't get that.
No. But it was a good experience.
I think the whole concept of life sharing was what appealed to me. I didn't have the word for it back in the 70s, but that's what I valued there, I think. Having taught school 1 year and retired because... The public school in southeastern Ohio was difficult. It was a time when corporal punishment was used. And when I didn't use the paddle that the principal gave me, I realized I was not in the right place. And he felt I wasn't either, because he wanted somebody who would toe that line. So after retiring, I wasn't sure where to go, what to do next, but having done my education in special education, I felt like when I heard about Innisfree, it would be a way to use that experience, but in a far more warm and total environment. Living and working and being with adults. Yeah, it was very appealing, and it really caught my interest and kept my interest, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, I think that there are many facets to Innisfree, and definitely I could see why that would have interested you. And many other people at the time, I think, were somewhat back to landers, which was which was an alternative lifestyles, I think, were more pursued at that juncture of time. There were a variety, but I remember we used to have to save our onion.
Yeah.
For dye, for the dye that was used in the woven goods.
And recycling and all of the things that the country seems to have caught on to. I felt like we were doing early on in the village, even solar panels before they were very good. We even were using them and embracing that technology. I think the that back to land is one way of thinking about it, but also it was people who were living much more kindly and gently. And yet life sharing sure meant a lot of other things too. It meant losing autonomy to a degree. It meant everybody knowing what you're doing and yet embracing that with living side by side coworkers, people with disabilities, really enriched it. It made it not a self-serving endeavor, but more a purposeful one.
Yeah, yeah, and also I think people were exploring living not in a 9-to-5 atmosphere, and Innisfree certainly was that, and it may be what is difficult now to attract people because the going to work and leaving, going home and being completely on your own after going home is sort of what the expectation of a job is.
And I think COVID in a way has brought people to value what was already in existence at Innisfree. People working from home and doing a job, but also getting up and going and making lunch or changing a diaper or whatever they needed to do in their lives, making it fit. And I always have valued at Innisfree that flexibility for people. I remember when my mom was very, very ill, being able to go and be with her. That was embraced. I mean, it was talked about, but it was embraced to do that, to be and do what you have to do.
Yeah, I think I remember you saying when you had gone, I think, and worked with ARC in Charlottesville, and said what you had missed when you came back to Innisfree was being able to be in charge of your own rhythms. If you needed to do an errand, you could go do an errand, but you would make up for, I mean, you would be there full time in the evenings, on the weekends.
Right, right.
That sort of, there wasn't a big delineation. And I think you're right. During COVID, there was a little more of that. And I think it's important, like if a parent wants to go to their child's soccer game, that they can go.
And that was never questioned at Innisfree, that you would be able to have that flexibility.
Right, right. Yeah, and that also, I think in many aspects of our lives, I've heard it from friends who have gone into assisted living. And one of the things they don't like about assisted living is that they have to fit into schedules of other people. They can't make their own.
I think we were in a lucky position coming into Innisfree when it was in its infancy. We got to help create the structure that much of it still persists. And it wasn't formalized. It hadn't developed. I was remembering as I was thinking about getting to know you that one of the first ways we got to know each other was whenever an event or an activity was over, you and I were the ones sweeping the floor. You know, everybody else disappeared and we were still there cleaning up.
Right. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I knew I'd found a kindred soul. Yes.
That was when the community center was half of the weavery.
That's right.
The one with the fireplace.
Right. I was committed to getting it cleaned up because I was in the weavery the next day. But also, I think it was all that Girl Scout training that capers were part of the deal until the entire event was over.
Yeah. And I think that also the coworkers that we lived with at the time could independently go back or mm-hmm. I know Sato was at home. We were living in Walnut Level, which was the old men's house.
Yeah.
John D, Sandy Robeson, Monty Owen, and Robert Burroughs.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The wise old men. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
One of the hardest parts at Innisfree has been, and I guess hardest and best part is being there when community members were aging out and were becoming ill and dying. I know when I first came back after I had had that experience working in Charlottesville at Region 10 at the ARC, one of the things that brought me back was Susie's death. Just watching how the community rallied around her and the experience, pinpointed for me what was missing in a traditional job. Innisfree provided real community.
Yes. I particularly around those times, I remember when my mother died, who had been living with us, and the community brought food, and it was a real neighborly feeling, and there was such a, because she had been sort of the grandmother of the yes. village at that time. Yes. And I think you know, many coworkers were really wanted to talk about her, and I think it was good for coworkers to know the passing of.
Oh, absolutely. It's practice for every one of them, for all of us, for all of us. I remember the most touching experience that I had was Judith was declining and had Down syndrome and Alzheimer's, and her sister Susan had come down to be in the village for what was likely to be the final days or weeks of Judith's life. Mm-hmm. And I had been at the house on Friday, and then I got a call Saturday morning that she had died. And so I went to a bakery and got a bunch of baked goods and brought them to Meadow. And there was all this gathering of souls, you know, just everybody was coming to Meadow to be there, to be together, to mm-hmm. remember Judith. And I saw Jim Levinson sitting in a corner, and I realized maybe Jim didn't know what went on. Maybe he caught on, maybe he didn't. So I invited him into his room, and I said, Jim, I don't know if you know what happened this morning, but your friend Judith died. And he looked at me and he said, necktie. I said, what? Necktie. Right. And it took me a minute to know that he knew he was going to get dressed up or something because Judith had passed. And mm-hmm. I said, you don't have to, but if you want to, you can come down with me to her room and we can say goodbye. But it's your choice whether you mm-hmm. want to do that or not. And he got up from sitting on his bed, and we walked down the hall together to Judith's room. Mm-hmm. And Dolores and Judith's sister, Susan, were there. And Jim was unbelievable. He leaned in and bent over Judith and kissed her on the forehead and mm-hmm. said, good night, Judith. He turned around and walked away. And Dolores and Susan and I looked at each other. And we each said, I'm glad you were here to see that, because nobody else would have realized or believed that mm-hmm. it happened.
Right, 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 right. I wonder if that's something that he had seen happened before, is that, or if that was just a spontaneous.
It felt so that he was so moved because mm-hmm. he turned around and went down to his room, and he went into his room and he didn't slam the door. So I felt like the whole event was very moving. And Judith, what a life, you know,
she had been a spark in the community.
Amazing, amazing person.
Right.
Challenging right. and stubborn and pretty wonderful.
She was a presence.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're talking about the passing in the community. I'm balancing that. I remember when Melinda they had decided to give birth. She had a she had
midwife, wasn't it?
A midwife.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she wanted to be in the village. Actually, she was up at Hollow Tree.
Yeah.
At the time, but.
And it was Parents' Day.
Raising Krishna from a baby was something that the co-workers really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Doted on him.
Yes. I remember we had a baby shower before he was born, and we went to Phyllis Frame's house, and mm-hmm. there were 6 or 8 or 10, I don't know, of us sitting around, and we all realized none of us had ever been to a baby shower. We didn't even know what you were supposed to do. We were younger then.
Right. Right, 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 right. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Well, I think I agree. We didn't use the word life sharing. That was actually, wasn't it something that you came across in Camp Hill, in Kimberton, in
Yes, and it so well described for. Mm-hmm. the issues of explaining us to the state.
Yes, you use that in the licensure, mm-hmm. which was a yeoman's job to get Innisfree licensed.
Yes, when they changed all the categories and right. they didn't know where to put us.
Yes.
And in the end, gratefully, they made a new category and we're in it.
Right. Yeah, that summed it up well.
Yeah.
Because that actually was what I felt, you know, during the time I was living an industry. One of the downsides of community living is everybody knows your business, but that's also a upside too.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a, like, you're a known quantity. That's
all. Yes.
And it goes through those life events and good days and bad days. Everybody has them. So.
Well, and the village had them too. I think that period of time where we were dealing with the question of Heinz's future was one that was really challenging. And maybe, certainly you can relate to how difficult the time was when a founding director was ready to leave. It wasn't smooth. It wasn't pretty.
No. Yes, I think that naturally it's something, you know, that the board and parents were very concerned about is like to have a type of succession in place. But I think actually, and so, you know, in the village, we had our regular committee, including Heinz, to discuss that. But it was clear in the discussions that he was not able to talk about a succession. That just was, I don't know whether there was too much emotion, how he envisioned. He threw out some ideas of a three-person,
triumvirate or something.
I think it was just not something that could rationally be discussed, and perhaps that's part of with the founding, the person whose kind of baby it was, it's that letting go, which was very difficult for him.
Mm-hmm. So, but there were people in the wings, and you stepped right in.
Well, I think it was a more natural, although I wasn't planning that. But it was a natural because I had been in the office. I was the person who answered the phone a lot of the time. So the parents knew me well, and I think we were more contemporaries. And so it made a it's not as if it made a natural kind of, and I think the idea to have you come as co-director in the following year made that transition a smooth one.
It cushioned it for the parents, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But that's always, I think, if you study or read about communities, or not even communities, you know, the small movements it's that transition period, which when it goes into a new phase, that can be very rocky.
I think that kind of ego that was needed to start the village was also an ego that was unable to step back. Mm-hmm. And Heinz, I think he was very surprised when he offered his resignation and it was accepted. And I think that gave an avenue, gave a way to start the process.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that was it. It was going to have to happen at some time.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But those early days when we first arrived, before the question of transition and when it was still gelling, I think of some of the projects we did that would be hard to have now because the village is a little more into their day-to-day routine. But when the horse stalls were put together, when you guys first arrived, the family arrived, I mean, everything else stopped. And that's what we did for a month. We put horse stalls together, nailing boards and drilling holes and staining them. And everybody was a part of it. Or when haying took
place. Right. Somebody would, because Joe would never ask or never tell us in advance. Someone would have to be out looking to see whether the tractor was the baling was taking place.
Yeah, you'd hear the tractor and the baler start, and then everybody'd go home and put on their overalls and get ready, and their gloves to get ready. And then there were people who couldn't go in the field, and they would get water for everybody because it was always the hottest damn day of the year.
Right. Yeah. The hardest part was when we sent the up into the barn on the conveyor.
Oh, and on top, it was so hot.
It was so dusty.
Oh golly, yeah.
Yeah. Those are the unplanned and things that add spice in retrospect to, and I think it brings people together.
I think it's what healed other wounds was getting out there and sweating together and working together. And ironically, during the summers, when we often were two or three people short of where we wanted to be, everybody pulled together harder. And in a sense, it was that time of shortage and pulling together harder because you had to fill gaps that cemented the community, I think. It built friendships that that still persist. You and me and many people from those early years still in touch.
I can remember Pete Marshall with his hay fever acting up.
And he Miriam, was there even so. Yeah.
Yep. And Miriam was a expert driver of the tractor. She was
really it does remind me of the Peace Corps motto, where it's the toughest job you'll ever love. And the only thing I'd change in that was I didn't think of Innisfree as a job, but it was the toughest life that you might ever love, because it pulled together people from different viewpoints and different backgrounds and somehow made our lives together.
Right. You know, aside from the haying and the horse stalls, I think another thing, although sometimes people objected to our weekly meetings, which eventually became every other week, was the whole village, and the alternate week was the volunteers, only that those community meetings, which had an agenda, I remember in the whole community that Marnie was usually doing the taking a poll of who had had their toenails cut. But that we always left room at the end of the agenda. We went around the circle for people to, if they had anything, sometimes people just passed. And sometimes people had something they wanted to bring up. And and I know that you sometimes felt the meetings went on too long.
Oh, well, they were really, really long. But I do think that it's what drew us together at the same time. You, and people occasionally would be really angry. People would storm out. People would come back and kind of hash it through. And figuring out how to do that, isn't that really what life is about? Learning how to live together.
Right, right, right. Yes, I think that always people used to tell me when they left, the volunteers left, that they had learned so much about themselves while they were at Innisfree. So, and I think that's always true. I mean, it's about life. And I think that our whole society now, I read a lot about social media and its effect on how people relate. And particularly teenagers, I think that who do a lot of their commuting, they're connecting through different apps. It's so different from face to face, looking somebody in the eye. And it may be efficient, but I think it's going to alter our human relationships.
Right. They didn't sweat together on the hay wagon, and they may really miss out. I feel grateful to that we overlapped in our time there. It enhanced and enriched life sharing for me to be there with your family.
Yeah, it's one at Innisfree has made very deep friendships and connections, and I feel, although many of the coworkers that I knew the best have died now, but they really also became lifelong friends. And
I'm glad I stumbled upon it as a 25-year-old looking for my next adventure, because retiring after 1 year of teaching left a lot of life and career ahead, and it was really wonderful to find the village. I feel like we grew up together.
Yes.
I just want to jump in and say we're at about 39 minutes. So any closing thoughts that you would like to share, or anything you'd like to say to each other before I stop recording?
I have been thinking a lot about Innisfree because of its 50th celebration, of course, 51 actually, but, and what is the prognosis of communities. And every time I read about intentional communities, there's always seems to be a lifespan. They have, I think that one person said 20, if they last 20 years, it's a good run. But with Innisfree lasting 50 years, I have read that sometimes as things go on past 50 years, that it becomes institutionalized. And I think that that is a challenge that constantly the volunteers and board and parents will have to guard against, because I think that what makes Innisfree special is that it doesn't fit into the normal categories like you tried to find for licensing. But at the same time, it has to fit into what is current in this world, what the demands are. But I don't have an answer. I think about it.
Oh, I was hoping you did, but I think the presence of volunteerism is the essence of what makes Innisfree unique. And maintaining that is critical to its longevity. But I do think Innisfree can ebb and flow and change. And if it doesn't, it stagnates. There's a town program as part of Innisfree because Innisfree changed when right. there was that need. So I would encourage and hope for the retention of a robust volunteerism and openness to new ideas.
Yeah. I know we used to say that the blueprint would be to follow the evolving needs of coworkers. So that's still, but I think along with that evolving need of coworkers has to come the evolving need of volunteers and people who are sharing their life there. So will be interesting to know what happens.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. I am going to allow for about 10 seconds of silence on the track, and then we'll stop the tape and talk through next steps.